Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Governor Mike Dunleavy appointed Mike Barnhill to serve as the acting commissioner of the Department of Revenue. Dunleavy announced a temporary appointment yesterday. Barnhill started work today, attending a board meeting of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Former Commissioner Bruce Tangeman announced he would resign in November. Tangeman wrote in an article for the Anchorage Daily News that he wanted Dunleavy, quote, to have someone who was 100% aligned with his vision, end quote. Until he started a new position, Barnhill was the policy director for the State Office of Management and Budget. He previously served as the deputy commissioner of the Departments of Revenue and Administration and served as assistant attorney general. A spokesperson for the governor's office says a search for a permanent commissioner is underway and that Barnhill is more than capable of managing the department until the permanent commissioner is selected. State law requires that the head of each state department face a confirmation vote by the legislature. The state confirmed its first case of vaping-related illness today. Up until now, Alaska was the only state in the country that had not reported any instances of e-cigarette or vaping-related lung injury. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more.
As of November 20th, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said more than 2,000 cases of vaping-related illnesses had been reported across the United States. At least 47 people have died. Fortunately, Alaska's first suspected case does not appear to be life-threatening. State epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin says the teenage male patient from Southeast is responding well to treatment.
This is a hard thing to have to go through, especially over the holidays. Fortunately, the patient is recovering steadily.
He says the patient was admitted to the hospital on Thanksgiving Day after experiencing shortness of breath and chest pain that grew worse over several weeks. To protect the patient's privacy, state officials would not confirm where they were first admitted. But McLaughlin says he's being treated out of state. The teen apparently vaped nicotine products for several years and THC products for at least 2 to 3 months before the symptoms began.
The patient reported that the THC products came from a source outside of Alaska, and that's the extent of the information we have.
He says they plan to send some of the product the teenager was using to the CDC for further testing. People who have died from vaping-related illness tend to be middle-aged or older. But much of the national coverage has focused on the large number of teenagers getting sick after using e-cigarettes and vaping products.
It's something that we're definitely seeing on the national level, that most of the cases are in teenagers and young adults. And it's unclear whether that is a representation of the amount of use or the type of product that's being used by people in those demographics.
It's not clear why people are getting sick. But the CDC recently identified vitamin E acetate, a substance used in some THC products, as a potential concern. For now, the CDC is recommending that people stop using e-cigarette or vaping products, especially if they contain THC.
The only way to assure that you're not at risk while the investigation continues is to consider refraining from the use of all e-cigarette or vaping products.
McLaughlin says there aren't any other suspected cases of vaping-related illnesses being investigated in Alaska right now. But healthcare providers should be on the lookout and report any suspected cases to the Alaska Section of Epidemiology. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
A multimedia exhibit about the Arctic popped up in a trendy warehouse district of Washington, D.C. a few weekends ago. It aims to wow, not just with beautiful video, but scented fog and ethereal music. Alaska Public Media correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on a production designed to compel young people to care about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
And checking in for two here?
Two.
Yeah. Okay, you two can stand right behind me. If you just grab an iPad, you can sign a waiver.
The show, called The Arctic Refuge Experience, sold out at $10 a ticket, and outside a former meat market, hundreds lined up to get in. The crowd was ushered into groups of 20. A series of guides helped set the mood.
This is a serene, a peaceful, really lovely experience. We'd love to keep that vibe going, so please silence your phones.
This is a new kind of outreach campaign by the Wilderness Society. With the government preparing for the first oil lease auction in Anwar, the Wilderness Society is trying to activate a new generation to keep up the fight. And a younger cohort requires a different kind of engagement. Exhibit ushers made it clear they wanted visitors to keep their phones silent, but in hand.
You're going to want to take photos. You're going to want to take video. We'd love it. And if you share it on social, which we hope you do, please hashtag it Protect the Arctic, because that is what this is all about.
First up, we're in a small room for an introductory video. It features stylized caribou that glow like constellations. The narrator is Gwich'in Steering Committee leader Bernadette Dementev of Fort Yukon.
It has existed unspoiled and undeveloped for thousands of years. Can you picture a place like that?
But what's that sound in the background? Crickets in the Arctic? Never mind that, it's on to the main show. Now we're in a big room with half a dozen giant video screens. The room smells faintly of Labrador tea, and white clouds billow in from an unseen fog machine.
We're looking at a river melting, and ice, and now it gives way to the Brooks Range, covered in lichen. And now we're back to the caribou.
Seconds later, our Arctic experience takes a sudden turn.
A wall of black tar just descended.
When the lights come on, a guide leads us to the action room.
All throughout this entire room, you will find a series of lots of different actions that you can take right now.
Here, visitors can sign a manifesto. They can pose at a photo booth with a snowflake backdrop. Hashtag protect the Arctic. Or they can pick from a bank of phones and leave a message for the CEO of Exxon, Hillcorp, or for the Interior Secretary.
Karen Woods, CEO of Exxon Mobil.
Please leave your message after the beep.
Hi, Mr. Woods. My name is Taylor Mace. I just wanted to tell you that I'm against any drilling in the Arctic.
Secretary Bernhard, this is Stephen Donahoe, and I'm calling to tell you not to drill in the Arctic.
Secretary Bernhard, good afternoon. My name is Alex Lopez. I'm calling to ask you to not open up the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge.
Irena Padrulo works for Do Something Strategic, the firm that put the show together. She says the wall-mounted phones are a big hit.
Right, they really are feeling phones have some kind of like retro nostalgic element to it, and they are really gravitating towards that.
Let me spill the beans here. Those phones aren't connecting to oil company offices. Padrulo says her team tried to get the direct phone lines of the executives and couldn't get past their gatekeepers. But they wanted to evoke the feeling of reaching out and making a call. So the messages are being recorded and will be delivered later. This is activism married with stagecraft. Padrulo says the whole concept was a challenge.
The intention really was to try to capture a really, really vast natural space that we know it's uncapturable.
Alaska Oil and Gas Association President Kara Moriarty hasn't seen the show, but she doubts it explains that development would be confined to a small portion of a refuge that's the size of South Carolina.
I would be curious to know if the exhibit highlighted the fact that over 92% of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is permanently protected. My guess is that it did not.
She guesses correctly. But the environmentalists say drilling would threaten the heart of the refuge. Some 4,000 people saw the show over 4 days in D.C., ditto for Brooklyn last month. The last stop for the Arctic experience is San Francisco. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
King salmon fishing is expected to be poor on the Stikine and Taku rivers. That's according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which released its forecast for the two rivers in southeast. The Stikine and Taku are both transboundary rivers that flow through the U.S. and Canada, and both countries agree to follow limited harvests. Managers on both sides of the border want enough kings to spawn for future years and, if possible, allow for subsistence, commercial, and sport fishing. But next year, it doesn't look like that will happen. The forecasts for the Stikine and Taku king salmon are slightly better than 2019, but still way below the numbers biologists want to see returning to spawn. The forecast for the Stikine River near Wrangell is 13,350 kings. That doesn't meet the escapement goal range, which means there won't be enough fish to allow for much commercial sport or subsistence fishing in District 8 near the river. Likewise, the forecast for the Taku River near Juneau is 12,400 king salmon, which is better than last year's forecast, but well below the escapement goal range. All fisheries in District 11 near the Taku will also be limited. The largest king salmon run on record for the Stikine River was in 2006, which saw 90,000 kings. That's about 6.7 times more than the forecast this year. And on the Taku, the record was in 1997 at nearly 115,000 fish. The Southeast Alaska commercial fisherman has been convicted for his role in illegally harvesting nearly 7,500 pounds of sea cucumbers near Prince of Wales Island. Jonathan McCraw Jr. of Nakati Bay pleaded guilty to fishing in closed waters and providing false information on a harvest report. Both are misdemeanors. In 2018, McGraw and two others were charged with illegally fishing in a scientific preserve near Whale Pass. That area has been closed to fishing since the 1980s. According to the Anchorage Daily News, other divers told wildlife troopers the men were bringing in large loads of sea cucumbers, but no one was seeing McGraw's boat, the bottom time, in the usual fishing areas. McGraw was sentenced to a month in jail and fined more than $35,000, the value of the sea cucumbers. He will also lose his commercial fishing privileges and be on probation for 1 year. One of the other two men who was charged, Curtis Looper, was convicted in late 2018 of fishing in closed waters. The National Weather Service has a winter weather advisory in effect for Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Advisory is in effect until 11 a.m. Wednesday. Snow is expected with accumulations of 3 to 6 inches. The greatest snow accumulations are expected tonight and Wednesday morning. Advisory says hazardous conditions could impact the morning commute. And finally, creators of the popular video Baby Shark, whose doo-doo-doo song was played at the World Series in October, are developing a version in Navajo. Pinkfong, a brand of the South Korea company Smart Study, announced last week it's working with the Navajo Nation Museum in Window Rock, Arizona, to create a new version of the widely popular tune about a family of sharks. The company is seeking voice actors to portray the roles of Baby Shark, Mommy Shark, Daddy Shark, Grandma Shark, and Grandpa Shark. The Baby Shark dance video has garnered more than 3.9 billion views on YouTube. Navajo Nation is the largest Native American reservation in the U.S. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.